If you can, if you haven't already taken a seat, move just a little bit closer. You don't have to get up if you've already taken a seat, but if you're out there, and just so we can see everybody. Hey, so I'm Matt Dildine. I'm the CEO of the Fresno Rescue Mission, but before we begin, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you for gathering us here this morning. I thank you for all the people and all the hearts that I see here today that are trying to find out how we can pour ourselves into our city. I thank you for the opportunity that we have. I thank you for moving through people who respond to the gospel, and I pray that you would be with us, be present in our conversation today. In your son's name we pray, amen. Hey, well, I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you being here today. I just want to provide kind of a short story about me. So I'm the CEO of the Fresno Rescue Mission, but I've only been the CEO since October 1st. And before that, I was a 10-year practicing attorney. I was a partner in a big law firm here in town. And four or five years ago, I had to got a degree in Bible. I was an interim youth minister for a little bit, but my career was just going great. I felt like nobody had a better, for my peer range, that I just felt like nobody was more lucky than me and to have the career that I had. And I was enjoying everything. But I started looking around our city, and some things like really, really bothered me. One of those was, that we have, since 2008, we have the highest concentration of poverty in the United States. Like, that's crazy. What's even crazier is that we have the second highest concentration of Christians on the West Coast, short of only Bakersfield by 1%, who has a third of our population. Poverty, concentrated poverty to me just says that's a creation that God didn't intend. God did not intend for people to live in squalor and hotels and for kids not to have resources, right? That's not something that God intended. Most people know that we have the highest, we produce more food than anywhere else in the world, but most people don't know that we have the highest concentration of food insecurity in the nation. This region, the Central Valley region, has the highest concentration. Tulare, Kings, Fresno trade between the top 1, 2, and 3 for highest rates of food insecurity. So we're in a race with all the rest of the valley. We're in a race with the other valley counties about who's the top for the most hungry. So most food, those counties produce more food individually than some states, than most states. Yeah, we have the most hungry people. I heard a statistic that north of Herndon, we have the highest concentration of churches in California. And you think about that, and you're like, you go down the street, and there's this church, and there's Cross City, and there's this, another church. Yet, we have pockets in our city that have as high as 73% of people living in poverty with an average income of $12,000. Like, that is crazy to me. And I asked myself, and it wrecked me, because I'm like, is this what God intended? And I looked around, and my friends down the aisles, and I saw, like, it's people who are at the top of their game professionally. Business guys and the best teachers. I had friends at Winning Ward, the best teacher, and just great parents. Man, when they coached a team, they had edible arrangements at snack time, right? I mean, it was like crazy good, right? And they're all great people. But I also looked around and I thought to myself, how many of us like have been south of Shaw to do something? Like, when's the last time I saw like a poor person come to our church and like say, I need this help? Or when's the last time that we invested, like really moved the needle in poverty? How do we change these poor performing schools? How do we change these neighborhoods? If this is not what God intended, what did he intend for the people of God to do? And so because of my obsessive nature, it wrecked me, and it started like this process that I just started investing into all these things across our city and all these relationships and people and opportunities and trying to gain more understanding. I helped start a nonprofit in the poorest neighborhood in our city called Martin Park. And then I became a board member of the Fresno Rescue Mission. And then ultimately they asked me to become the CEO this past year. And that's where, and so I left the only career that I've ever known. And to go into the world of homelessness and poverty. And so I'm really excited that you're here today because I believe in Serve Fresno. And one of the things that really wrecked me, I'd probably say like one of the seminal, like, oh my gosh, something has to change, is I was sitting around a group of life group leaders, and this was 5 years ago, and we were all talking about Serve Fresno at that time, and three out of the five were saying how difficult it was to get their life group to participate in Serve Fresno, a single day of service. And I'm like, oh my God. We have the highest concentration of poverty, most hungry people, and most Christians, and we're struggling getting people to come to serve for one day. That was crazy to me. Because I didn't think the preaching could be any better. I didn't think our leaders at the church could be any better. I didn't think our singing could be any better. I didn't think we could have a more comfortable service. And if that was happening in any population, it was crazy to me. And so I'm excited that you're here because it means you're not one of those people. It means that you care about our city. You know, so one of the things I'd like to know as we begin our talk here today is, why did you show up to this session? What interests you about this session? What do you want to know? And this is a conversation session, so feel free to raise your hands or to blurt something out or to talk. So because I want this to be conversational. So I'm interested in knowing what do you want to know about homelessness or the Rescue Mission or how to help? Great, great, awesome. That's a great question. We'll definitely talk about that. Yep. Awesome. Great. Love talking about it. All right. Well, I love talking about what we do, and I love answering the questions that I just heard. So one of the things that I always preface any talk that I'm asked to give talks on homelessness, and when I do that, I want you to know this. We are not, the Fresno Rescue Mission is not just about homelessness. Homelessness is such a narrow population of the population of human suffering that we deal with. And that's because of the idea of who we have that is homelessness and really the real problems that we have out in the community. We have the pockets of concentrated poverty are so deep in this community, and the human suffering, it looks so different across the population that it's not just limited to that guy who's living in a tent on G Street. And so when we're talking about our future and what we do, it's everything from somebody who's living in a seedy hotel on Hotel Drive that needs help to the person who has been, you know, on the street for 10 years but wants life change. But we're not limited to just homelessness. Most of the people who are currently with us are not what you would picture like a traditional homeless person. Like, and part of that's also because we don't have necessarily a good understanding of what, you know, a common definition of what homelessness is. The federal definition is very narrow. It's somebody who is living out in the street. There's different types of those. So one of them is the chronically homeless. This is somebody who might be living out in the street for 10 years or 3 years or 4 years, and they're just always out in the street. They've had the opportunity to come inside and get help, but they're choosing not to. They may suffer from mental illness and have lost the ability to rationally make good decisions that would lead them inside. They may be addicted to drugs, and although they have the ability to make rational decisions, the addiction is telling them to do something different. But they've been out in the street a long time. Another group is the situationally homeless. These are people that may have like been evicted or lost their job or for some life circumstance The political tides have changed, and so a funding source has changed, and so a program goes under, and they have to leave. So these are the people who don't want to be homeless but find themselves being homeless. The biggest, to me, the biggest population is what I would call housing insecure. These are people that are living in unsafe environments that are not necessarily considered homeless by the federal guidelines, but we consider them to be the population that we serve. This, for example, would include somebody, a family staying in a one-bedroom hotel on a hotel drive in some, you know, where the guy next door is turned into tricks, right? In a very unhealthy environment, right, where there's human trafficking. This includes the 2,800 kids in Fresno Unified that are sleeping in their cars along with their parents. This would include the people that are couch surfing from apartment to apartment. This would include the two families staying in a one-bedroom apartment in Lowell. We have a huge population. So you hear this about the number of, you know, politicians like to say, oh, the homeless count has gone down. Last year we were at 1,900 homeless people. This year we're at 1,800 or 2,000. The fact of the matter is that we have tens of thousands of people who fall into this deep, deep cycle of situation, or the housing insecure and situation homeless. And so it is, the problem is far bigger than we like to say that it is. And so that's why our net is much wider than the people that are just living in the tents. The last category is domestic violence victims. There are many programs that don't consider somebody suffering domestic violence as somebody who is homeless. But man, if your husband's beating you and you can't go home because they're going to kill you, are you homeless? Yeah, you're homeless. And the population that falls into this category are generally low-income people. If my wife starts attacking me, I can go stay with a friend. I have the income to go get a hotel. I can go get an apartment. But the people who don't have the luxury of those things fall into a homeless situation. The Marjorie Mason Center has a lack of housing, right? We house people. We're an overflow for the Marjorie Mason Center. They need more housing and more opportunity because federal dollars on the federal guidelines, they're not necessarily the homeless. But they're homeless to me. They're homeless to us. They're homeless to Marjorie Mason Center. So the domestic victims of domestic violence are somebody that you would include in this category. Any questions so far? So when I started my job, I called around to a bunch of CEOs around the country, and I said, "Hey, what causes homelessness, and what's the solution? Right? What causes homelessness?" And almost uniformly, they gave me the same answer. And I went and looked that answer up, and I found it on TED Talks. Right? Someone giving a TED Talk. I found it on. I found it in a research report from Dublin. You know, Dublin, Ireland. I found it on various, you know, research studies here done by different universities. And the answer given, right, is a lack of community or lack of relationships. And it makes so much sense because, you know, there are other contributing factors, right? Drug addiction, mental illness, crime. But you can be mentally ill and not end up on the street. And you can have some sort of addiction and not end up on the street. It's when you don't have any place else to go, any other relationships or community in your life, like a church or family, or you've burned so many bridges that they don't respond to you anymore, that's when you have no place else to go. So it's the lack of community, it's the lack of relationships that's a huge contributor to this, you know, this homeless population. And so by the same token, what's the solution for how to solve it? Well, it's to provide community. And so that's why we at the Fresno Rescue Mission, that is the singular focus that we have in attacking this problem. It's creating community. It's creating a place, an environment where it's not an institutional environment. It is a community. It's an ecosystem. And I'm going to conclude my talk with how we are radically doing that, how we are going to radically do that even more in the future. So there's a lot of different issues that go into our homeless system. And I wanted to go over just some of those, touch on a few of those, to talk through everything, right, in our entire homelessness system and all the policies. We'd be here all day. But I wanted to touch on some highlights. So one of the things that people often ask me about is this no camping ordinance. Who's heard of like the no camping ordinance, remembers about reading about them, okay? So from a policy perspective, I don't think that it's a good idea for a city to allow people to sleep on the street. I advocate, and I get, you know, some people say that I'm mean and cruel, and although I'm a lawyer, I quit being a lawyer because I wanted to help people, so I'm trying not to be that mean or cruel. I think that we have to be at a place where we're saying it's not okay to be on the street. And the reason is because once somebody is on the street, it's like one of those movies where somebody's trapped in a room and the water starts rising or the air starts going out. Once you're on the street, the air is leaving the room. Your synapses will change and you will no longer be able to function past a certain point. We only have a limited amount of time before your synapses are so far gone that you can no longer think rationally, and that your only future is going to be have to be on publicly supported housing or public or some sort of public support, because you're no longer able to sustain yourself. You will not be able to hold a job. You'll not be able to think to be able to hold a job. And so that's why I believe that we need to have policies in place to get people off of the street as fast as we possibly can. Because once you're on the street, the air starts leaving the room. And so a few years ago, you heard about this no camping ordinance, right, that made it illegal for people to sleep on the street. I don't like charging people for being homeless, but I don't like throwing somebody in jail for being homeless. And I don't think the police did either, but that wasn't the intention of what was happened. So what happens with this is when this thing came about, we said, hey, we work with the police department, so they go up to somebody, they say, hey, you're not allowed to be on the street. Do you want to go get a citation or go to jail, or would you like to go to the Fresno Rescue Mission? And we would come and pick them up and take them back to our place. Out of everyone, there was only one citation given. One citation given. So that's the intention of how it was supposed to be used. It was just supposed to be used as a leverage point. And you got to understand, the police don't want, I want to make this clear, the police department don't want to cite people. If they have to arrest somebody, they have to take an inventory of everything they have on them. Well, if they have a tent and two shopping carts and a dog and grocery bags, that means they have to take an inventory of all that, right? Right? And so it's not like an easy thing. It's not something that they want to do. It's not like there are these cruel police officers out there trying to arrest somebody because they're sleeping in a tent. But they just need something to help people to move on. Then there was a court case in Idaho that said that you can't have one of those policies unless you have adequate bed space. And the determination is that faith-based bed spaces cannot count. So even though we have bed space that goes unused every night, we can't go, our beds can't be part of the city's number, which is why you see them focusing on creating additional bed space. So that's strange. It's again, being in this, the nonprofit world, you're seeing how much we get really attacked by the secular positions on this that really just keep trying to attack the faith-based initiatives and treat it like, hey, it's an attack on Jesus. Luckily, God is sovereign, and our numbers continue to rise. But one thing I do want to tell the community is that you can always show up. We will never turn somebody away that needs help, so long as they haven't, you know, some people come and they've like really done something horrible inside, and you know, we have drug dealers who show up and they want to come in because they want to deal drugs, and we're like, no, sorry, buddy, you can't. But generally, if you're just a person who truly wants help, truly wants shelter, we'll never turn anybody away. We'll always have a bed. We always have a bed, and we'll make a bed if we need it. So another thing that we have in our community is something called MapPoint. MapPoint is a computer software system administered by basically four different partners around the city. The main one is at the Poverello House, and there's two others. The Poverello House is next door to us. And what happens when somebody enters the MapPoint system, it kind of keeps track of where they're at within the various different providers. So it keeps track of them. We, because we're a faith-based organization, aren't on the MapPoint system officially because we won't sign their 119-page agreement that says that we can't preach Jesus or hire people who believe in Jesus. But we're the only 24-hour shelter in town. And so when the phones click off at Poverello, they switch to us, right? And on the weekends when Poverello's closed, they switch to us. And we have a very strong relationship going back and forth with Poverello. We're just the faith-based partner. So we're the silent map point, partner. But that's a system that we have that when someone is introduced, that we can get them on the map point and sort of keep track of their progress. There's something called a hotel voucher system. The hotel voucher system is an incredibly frustrating process. It's when somebody is homeless and we don't do this, but there's agencies that will help them get a hotel voucher for a place to stay. It's really frustrating because it takes a long time. The hotels are not good environments, and they're especially difficult for families. And families are the most difficult to place. There's no shelters for homeless. So we have a few apartments on site for a homeless family, but there's no shelters for homeless families in Fresno. There will be this year. I guarantee it, because I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it with The Well, too, as a partner. They don't know that yet, but I'm going to convince them. But the reason the hotel voucher systems are a problem is because you have to have a certain income level, meet a certain income level to get them. And then what happens is your family, they do it based on the household. And the more people in the household, the more that you need to make. And so it's problematic for families. So they're the hardest to place because they need the most. They need the most. And they're just very unhealthy environments. We have a domestic violence policy, like I mentioned earlier, that doesn't necessarily consider people suffering domestic violence as homeless. And so a lot of the dollars that could be going to them go to other places. And so Nicole Linder, who's a wonderful Christian woman, who's the CEO of the Marjorie Mason Center. It's a big frustration with her because, man, when the political winds shift and someone says, well, no, this isn't, you're not homeless, there's a change in the dollars when really those people are, in fact, homeless. And so she ends up putting a lot of people in hotels and things like that. I touched on this earlier, but we have a limited view of who is homeless. We, because we don't take federal dollars, can come up with our own definition. And so for us, we just focus on if you're poor in spirit, if there's human suffering, you're a population. But there's a lot of organizations, because they're dictated by federal mandates, that have a very narrow view of what the homeless is. So you're starting to see homeless. I think somebody mentioned about seeing homeless on the north end of town. There's laws that prevent encampments. And so what happens is the homeless will start to congregate, often across the street from us, and then the city will come in and have to break them up by law. Well, what happens is it seems like there's a lot more homeless around, like on the street, because we keep breaking up the anthills. And so you might see the same homeless person in four different places, but that's because they're always being shuffled around. So that's part of kind of where the law meets what happens in the real world. Are there any other questions at this point? So there's a few myths. So I forgot to mention this. We don't have a good solution as a state or community for the mentally ill. So it's like a huge problem because we just don't have systems in place that adequately support people that are suffering from mental illness. Without being able to institutionalize people, they're never going to choose to go inside and seek help. And then for places like ours, because dealing with mental illness is such is an area where you need expertise and you need to be able to offer medication, it requires like a whole different level of service that's beyond our current capacity, and it's really beyond anybody's current capacity to operate. And we can't, because we also cannot force people to come inside and seek mental health. They don't, because they can't think rationally. And so as a state, you know, one of the things that we try and tell people is that we do need to have a policy that we can institutionalize people, that when they're not well, that we have a place that provides them some dignity and they can help treat them. And we just don't. It's a huge problem, and there's no good solutions right now. We also have a system that allows people to live in their addiction. And this is some philosophy, and this is some policy. So one of the big knocks that people that sometimes I hear against the Rescue Mission is they say, oh, you're high barrier, and we're low barrier. And we have places around that allow you to live in your addiction. With us, we want to get your life changed, right? But what happens is if there's places that allow you just to live in your addiction, to do drugs, and that you can stay there, but they say, you know, look, I mean, when you want life change or when you want something, we're here for you. What happens? Well, if they're living in their addiction out in the street, they're going to live in their addiction inside. And we know that because we've done it. 10 years ago, we were just a shelter. We were just a shelter in a soup kitchen. And we were full every night. And you know, if people wanted to come and we would preach Jesus, and if people wanted to come, we'd try and attach them to services. But it didn't happen because there was nothing compelling them to do that. And so we looked statistically and seen very few people that had actually cycled out. And we made a change. And so I'll talk a little bit about some of the programs that we offer. But with us, when you're coming to us, our goal is to get you life change. Our goal is to get health into your life. And that can look like a variety of different options. But keeping the status quo is not one of them. The status quo is not acceptable. But when the guy down the street or the guy across town has no standards and you can live in your addiction, we have this, you know, it's like the 22-year-old sleeping on the couch that won't go get a job, right? At some point, you got to put a foot in his butt to get him to change his life. But if you keep allowing him to do that, and there's no incentive for him to do that, then he's not. And that's the same thing that happens here. And so so one of the things that we actively encourage from a policy standpoint is we have to have systems that encourage people to seek services and pursue life change. We have to say it's not okay to be homeless on the street, and it's not okay for you. Forget the community. The politicians, you know, they don't want homeless because they don't like how it looks, right? And so they don't want people camping because they don't know how it looks, right? And they tell me this, right? Behind closed doors. But I don't want you to be on the street because it's not okay for you. It's not okay for you. So in terms of a system, that's kind of the message that I want people to know and to understand of why we don't like people camping, why we don't think it's okay to be out on the street. Talking about a few myths. So there are homeless people that have lost the ability to think rationally. If the street was on fire, they wouldn't come inside. And that's, like I said, something has happened or they're mentally ill. I'm not saying that. But there's also a population who are absolutely choosing to be out there. They can choose to come inside, and they choose not to because they want to stay in their addiction. And so if you were just find a homeless person, you would say, hey, and he has a sign that says, cold, hungry, need help. Go to that person, say, the Fresno Rescue Mission will pick you up right now, and they will more than likely not come. We will give them a bed, shelter, life change, and they will not accept it. Majority of them will not. That's because a lot of them are choosing to be there, or they're not homeless. Fresno doesn't have enough bed space. So we could use more beds, but we have unused bed space right now. It's just they're choosing not, you know, so we have people that are sleeping out in the street. They could come inside anytime, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and they'll have a bed, hot shower, food, no questions asked. They can come inside. It doesn't happen. Myth three, panhandlers are homeless people. Most panhandlers are not, statistically, not homeless. Overwhelmingly, statistically, they're not homeless. And so we discourage people from handing out things to panhandlers. I'll get to in a little bit about handing out food and things like that and money to people on the street. But you should know that panhandlers are often not homeless. So the big question today is like how to not help. So as I think the gentleman in the back asked, like, do you give food? Do you give money out to somebody who's on the street? If you're here, you're a minister of the gospel. Do we all believe in Jesus? Do we all believe Jesus works? Do we all believe that Jesus works through us? Well, I believe that too. I was part of a group that my parents took me to a group that has served meals to the homeless one Saturday a month for 28 straight years. An amazing testament to people's faith. Have those people advanced the gospel in someone's life? Well, they've certainly prayed, but I'm not sure that anyone has cycled out of homelessness because of it. We have people who come and serve food on the street in front of the Fresno Rescue Mission all the time, especially during the holidays. When you serve food to somebody out in the street, that means that you're enabling them to live on the street, and it prevents them from coming inside where they can get help. I want people to come inside so they can feed them, because feeding is the least important thing that we do, but the conversation that we have with them while they're eating is a very important function of what we do. And so when we're enabling them as a city to say, hey, it's okay to be on the street, and I'm going to make it easier for you to be on the street, they're not coming inside and getting help from me or from one of the other service providers. Now, you know, somebody said in the last session, like, you know, I take someone to lunch or I pray with them, and I say, that's perfect. That's a healthy way to help. I am never going to tell someone, don't feed somebody, give money, because you know what? I'm not in every situation. I don't know you. I don't know what you're comfortable with. But if your generosity ends with the food or the dollar, then I say, think about not. One, because I want you to stretch your comfort zone, right? If that sandwich leads to a conversation, good. If that sandwich leads to a conversation that leads to a relationship, even better. Because maybe that relationship ends with you being able to help them come find help with us, right? Or help in some other way. But if it stops at the food or the dollar, then I'm not sure that you're doing any good. If that dollar ends up in a prayer, then I say great, because God moves through prayer and people need prayer. I think that's great. But if it doesn't result in a prayer, then I'd ask, and you're not trying for it, then I ask, what are we doing? What are we doing? If that's what you're doing and that's what you're comfortable with, I'd say, well, let's try and stretch your comfort zone. But if it's not, then give that dollar or the money you'd spend to your sandwich to me, and I'll provide it towards a meal for someone who will have a conversation with them inside, and I'll feed people with it. So that's kind of like, so that's why I never want to tell someone, like, don't feed somebody on the street or don't give somebody a dollar, because you are all ministers of the gospel. So if you're prepared to do that, or if it leads to that relationship, or you're trying for that relationship, that's a real positive thing. One of the things that we do is, and I'll show you in a second, but we tell people, get a yes and we'll do the rest. If you find somebody out in the street and they need assistance and you can get them to agree, hey, the Fresno Rescue Mission will give you a warm place to sleep and a meal, no questions asked, great, get a yes. You can call us, we will send an RV, come pick them up and deliver them to a healthy place and a healthy place to be. During the holiday season, there's people who come down and give out puppies. Well, you know what happens when you give out a puppy as an emotional support dog? That means that it's a barrier for them coming inside someplace, because a lot of places, including ours, don't take an endless amount of dogs. So it's a barrier for them to come inside of getting help. When you give out clothing on the street, a lot of times that becomes a bartering system for drugs, especially clothing or blankets. And so, because they can't carry an endless amount of clothing. A month ago, we did a cleanup on the street, on the lot that was across the street from our mission. It wasn't our property. But because so many people would come and give out clothes and blankets and food during the holidays, it looked like Haiti. I mean, it was just like after the hurricane, or the earthquake. It was just crazy. It was our city. And so the majority of things that we picked up were clothes. So they can be used if they're not coming inside, or they can get whatever they would need. It's allowing them to stay on the street. So with my remaining time, I wanted to talk about what the Fresno Rescue Mission does and where we're heading. So the Fresno Rescue Mission, we've been in business for 70 years. We have 100 employees. We're the largest provider to homeless providers in Fresno. So we have three different campuses. So somebody mentioned Rescue the Children. How many people have been to Rescue the Children? Great. So Rescue the Children is our sanctuary for women, so for single women and women with children. And I want you to imagine, if you were a homeless woman, or if your daughter or your sister or your mother was homeless, and maybe she had a child, where would you want them to go? Would you want them to go to downtown on G Street to stay in a big tent or a big warehouse building? No. Well, what if we created a place that was the nicest place, that looked like a resort, that had the best park, where they would eat in an on-site, on-campus restaurant, where the kids had a wonderful pool to play at, where there was lush landscaping that was all surrounded and completely protected to create a warm and nurturing environment? Now, whatever you're picturing, raise your expectations up a little bit, and that's what Rescue the Children is. It's the nicest facility for women and children that we have. It is a gold standard. It is a gold standard, and something that we're really proud of, because God did it. God made it happen. And so if you're a woman and you are coming off the street and you need emergency shelter, we have a place that's designed specifically for single women and women with children. If you're a woman who wants life change, well, then we have another wing of Rescue the Children, which is an 84-room converted hotel that has where you can pursue life change in a nurturing environment. It is literally probably nicer than most of the places these women will ever stay in their entire life. It's a wonderful facility. Now, unfortunately, not a lot of people know about it because it's not called Fresno Rescue Mission, but it's part of what we do. Now, on G Street, we have our downtown campus. And that provides the location for our what we call community care, which is our front door for people that are coming off the street. Now, what happens, they come in, we provide them shelter, we provide them food, a place to stay, and they get one night free, and then the second day when they're there, we say, how can we improve your life? How can we help you? And we use that as a leverage point to try and transition them to the next phase of help in their life. For some, that's permanent housing. For some, it's finding a job. For some, it's reconciling with them with family. For some, it's into our academy program. It's different for everybody. Now, our academy program is our 12 to 18-month recovery program that's designed for life change. People often say, if you want true life change, come to the Fresno Rescue Mission. You know, there's other like 3-month recovery programs or 3-month trauma programs. They just don't work. What we have is we've created an ecosystem that pours into the guys, and they are truly, I mean, it's incredible, incredible to see the change and transformation. We did this cleanup event this a month ago, and we had our disciples out on campus, and someone come up to me and says, "Man, your employees are so nice." And I said, "Those aren't my employees. Those are my disciples." That's what happens when, you know, 6 months ago, they were completely strung out on drugs or homeless or about to get in jail or coming out of jail and the last people you'd want to employ or leave your kids with. And then 6 months later or a year later or however much time they're in our program, they look like the guy that you're leaving your kids with or your funny uncle. I mean, they're like, it's incredible. They're like that. If you go to our campus, it looks like the happiest place in the world. Like everybody walks around smiling. And it's crazy. It's just crazy to see the change that happens. What I want people to understand is that we're more than just a soup kitchen. We This year will become a site for Fresno City College, where the men and women in our program will actually be able to take college classes and be students at Fresno City College. We teach everything from trying to get their forklift certification to working on cars that people donate, which then the cars are then taken to our thrift store, which is our third location, where we give people jobs that were unemployable, right? When you've been in jail for 6 years, have been on the street for two more, it's hard to get a job. So we give them some place. We give them a place for those that can't find jobs elsewhere after they get out of our program as their first entry point into the workforce. So how can we help? So we have a variety of different opportunities, but what I really wanted to communicate to you is the differences in the opportunities. You know, I break things down into three general categories: exposure opportunities, service opportunities, and ministry opportunities. I love people to be ministers. I love people to serve. And exposure opportunities are a little bit different. An example of an exposure opportunity is you coming to the Rush Commission to feed people. Now, I'm really happy that you're there. We love people coming in and do that because we love exposing you to our homeless population or to our neighbors or to what goes on. But if you weren't there, the people are still going to get fed, right? No matter where you go to feed people, they're still going to get fed. We'll have people in place to do that. That system it doesn't save us any money. They will always get fed. And so it's not really a value add to us or the person receiving the food, although we appreciate a nice smiling face and we encourage people to do this. I don't want you to hear that we don't want you. We absolutely do. But part of the reason that we want you to is to get you to a service or ministry opportunity. A service opportunity would be something that adds value back to the mission. For example, we have a program that's called Bring a Meal, where you or your life group or your company can come and we turn over the kitchen to you. Instead of us having to pay for the meal, you guys are preparing it. You're having a community event with your neighbors or your company, and you guys are doing it. We don't have to pay for the meal. We don't have to have the overhead for the employees doing it, and you guys get to do it. And it's a great value add to us. Now, a ministry opportunity would be different. A ministry opportunity would be you coming in, getting a tray of food, and sitting with the people there that are also feeding, and to talk about them and to form a relationship. And that, it's a ministry opportunity because you're advancing the gospel. You're advancing the gospel in somebody else's life. I mentioned earlier that another way to get involved is So for each of those different things, we have a variety of different programs of ways that you can become involved with the Rush Commission. We love mentors, people that come and walk alongside our guys or our women to come teach it. You can come teach a class. Come walk alongside when we do street outreaches. We need people to help connect people back with the families or to serve the families of the people that are inside. This year, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be opening up a family shelter. And what we're going to tell the church is we're going to have these 15 units. And we're going to go to the well and we're going to say, guess what, well, this family shelter is right down the street from you guys. And you know what? We're going to do what we're the best at, and we're going to case manage, and we're going to help counsel, but we need you to be the church. We need you to form relationships with the people inside there, and when their car breaks down, we need you to fix it. And when they need a job, we need employers in congregation to help. And when their kids need help with their schoolwork, that you're going to be there. And when their kids need backpacks, you're going to give it to them. You're going to be the church. We're going to do what's on our side, but you're going to do what's on your side. And we're together, we're going to move the needle of poverty. Number four is get a yes. As I mentioned earlier, one of the ways that you could help us is to get a yes. If you're out in the community and you're in Woodward Park or you're in Harlan Ranch or Clovis, I'm just kidding, there's no homeless people in Clovis, but I joke with them about that. But if you get a yes, we'll do the rest. You can call us. We will come there in our RV in a trailer and pick them up and take them, and we'll take care of them. But you forming the relationship, we can't form a relationship with everybody out in the street. But the church can. So if you get a yes, we'll do the rest. You know, the final way is, you know, this is not a fundraiser for us, right? But I want people to know that we're a church just like anybody else. But our congregation is a little bit different. We are completely about the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the how and the why of what we do. And we're the only provider of men, with the men and women and family shelters that provide these types of programs that is the gospel, that is a gospel-centered program that believes and follows Jesus, that is central to their, that is central to the mission. And I love that because I sit at places like I'm sitting, you know, in places with other partners. I'm not saying aren't bad. They're good. You know, we're sitting next to the Pavarello House and Westcare and Turning Point and the Housing Authority, right? And I'm talking to groups of people on panels. And at the end, I say, who here believes in Jesus? You know, and most of the room raises their hand. I say, great. We do too. And that's the most important thing that we do. And that's what differentiates us from every other provider. Is that for us, we believe that you are changed because the gospel changes people and wants sustainability and health into your life. But so we're a church. 95% of our funding comes from private donations. We don't take government funding. The other 5% comes very little bit from actual churches, from foundations, and from grants. And if you looked at our fundraising, it doesn't come from some huge, you know, billionaire writing us a $250,000 check. It really comes from people writing us $10 and $20 checks. And so it is terribly inspiring to know that just like we have built up the Well Church here, and just like down the street, the members have built up the Cross City Church there, and other churches in town, our church just looks a little bit different. But over the last 70 years, it's been built into something that's amazing. And so that's another way that that you can be involved with us. We don't have a congregation the same way that the Well does, yet we're a church. So that's another way that you can get involved. So I have about 10 minutes left, and I want to talk about where we're heading and what we're doing. But if there's any questions at this point? Yes. No, so to volunteer with us, you go through a volunteer orientation, and that's for a variety of different things. We do that to help connect you with something that would inspire you and that fits within what the types of things that you want to do. We, in some ways, welcome people to use their God-given time, talents, and resources to find ways and niches to serve. But we also do that to kind of like help educate you on how to serve and how not to serve within our, you know, within our parameters of what we do. So, yeah. So what I'm really excited about, and one of the reasons that I left the only career that I had ever known to become the CEO of the Rescue Mission, is about what our future holds. You know, we have these pockets, these huge pockets of concentrated poverty, and people sleeping in hotels, and people sleeping in cars, right? And yet, we lack systems in order to change those. You know, the gospel is horizontal and vertical. It is horizontal in the respect of it cares about what your immediate needs are. It cares that you have food and shelter, right, and clothes on your back. But it's also vertical in that it cares about what your life looks like. It cares that whether or not you can provide your own food and your own shelter, and that you have the ability to live a life of fulfillment and nourishment in the life that God intended. God didn't intend you to struggle from paycheck to paycheck. God did not intend for you to not have food on your table, or for kids not to live, or for kids to live in hotels. And we recognize that. And you know what? We also recognize who we are. You know, we teach people how to be mechanics, but we're only okay at it. You know who's really good at it? Fresno City College. You know, we don't teach people how to weld, but you know who's really good at it? Fresno City College. You know, we don't teach people how to work on computers. You know who is? Does? Bitwise. Bitwise is really good at it. You know who's really good at counseling women through domestic violence? Marjorie Mason Center is. You know who's really good about teaching people about sexual addictions? New Creation Ministries. You know who's really good about helping people maintain good finances and good healthy banking and not going to payday loan lenders? There's some nonprofit credit unions are really good at it. You know who's really good about teaching financial literacy? Randy White and the Center for Community Transformation. We have a lot of really good organizations in town that pour into the same populations of people. You know, I was meeting with the president of Fresno City College this week, and I was walking on campus. I saw a place for veteran services, and I saw a place for housing services, and I saw a place for financial aid, and I saw a place for counseling services, right? And it was directing me all these places on a common campus. And why? It's because when you're 19, right, and you are kind of going out of the nest, and what do you need? You need places to kind of direct you to housing and connect you to the cafeteria, right? And then they're training you on how to, with certain life skills, and they're training you with certain vocational skills, and they're helping you with certain counseling issues, right? But what if instead of being on a common campus, that was, you had to go to the learn welding on that side of town, and you had to go to the financial aid on this side of town, and veteran services were on this side of town, and counseling was on this side of town. Would that be an efficient system? Well, I want you to think about the 25-year-old, right, that has no life skills, that's, or the 30-year-old or the 35-year-old that has no life skills, that's cycling in and out of homelessness in a car or an apartment. They don't have vocational skills, but they have a need for housing, right? They have a need for life skills, right, that they hadn't developed because of infirmities in their life. They have a need for certain counseling, right, whether that's addiction or some other form of counseling that's preventing their life from moving forward. Right? They have a need for all the same things that a college student might. The high-speed rail chose us to drive a train through our property. As a result, they're giving us the opportunity to rebuild and start anew. And so when we ask ourselves, what would we do with our future? We say we'd build a college. What would our college look like? I mentioned Fresno City College, and I mentioned Marjorie Mason, I mentioned Bitwise, I mentioned some of these other providers. You know, it would be easy for us to say, well, let's build this big, grand college and call it and just be the Fresno Rescue Mission. But we recognize we're not the best in everything. But what if instead we built a place where we welcomed on campus people with a common vision and a common desire to change people's lives? And so instead of us teaching welding, we invited Fresno City College to teach welding. Instead of us teaching computers, we invited Bitwise. Instead of us doing every type of counseling, we invited other counseling nonprofits on and agencies on our campus. Instead of us providing childcare, we asked the nonprofit childcare providers to be on our campus. Instead of us providing service on service, we're inviting the community of service providers onto a common campus so that, you know what? We can do what we do best, which is standing in people's dark places and not flinching, no matter what you've done in your life. We can be the gospel in your life. And the second thing that we do better than anybody else is create community. But Fresno City College doesn't create community. Bitwise doesn't. Some of these other places don't. That's cool. That's great. That's what we do. But we can all create the community together. So that's why what we're planning on doing is we're currently working on the acquisition of a large hospital complex where we're going to create a college campus so that no matter what you've done, what will happen is that you will come into our system. You will come into our system. You will begin a 3 to 5 day assessment. You will be given a card that has points on that card, and you can use the points on that card to secure housing. You can go to our cafeteria, which is not going to operate like a cattle call line, right, where you stand in line and get your tray, but looks more like a college or a hospital type of cafeteria where you, if you want a sandwich, you go buy a sandwich. If you want spaghetti, you go buy spaghetti. You can go to our market, right, and buy groceries as opposed to be given a food box like you're in a food pantry line. You can go to the commissary store or thrift to buy things with the points on their card. And how do you get points on your card? You go to your welding class. You go to your counseling session. You go learn about computers, right? No free lunches, but nobody pays for anything. Everything is earned. We're flipping how we serve those that are broken and in poverty on their head. We're creating, I mean, you tell me, if you were in that place in your life, right? We have people that don't come inside right now, right? Because they think we tell them what to do and they tell them what to do when there's rules. But what if we said, guess what, guys? No more institutions. This is a college. You're coming us to change your life in the same way that a 25-year-old going to USC would. We're all trying to advance in our life. So we ask, what would the gospel look like in a campus? And so that's what we're trying to achieve. And how do we do that? Somebody asks, well, how do you do that with some of these public institutions? And I say, well, it's a lot easier for me to work with a public institution for a public institution to work with me than to work with them. When I go into the public, the county system, I have to sign a 119-page agreement that says I can't preach Jesus. When they come on my campus and they come work with me, I give them a 5-page Jesus and I just say, hey, I won't tell you how to weld. You don't tell people how to preach Jesus. We're good. I'll teach the Jesus part. You do the welding part. And together, we can both do what we're best at on the common campus. And so that's what our future looks like. There's a lot of unanswered questions, and God is moving, and it's a terribly exciting time, and it's a terrible, scary time altogether. But we're trying to say, what would this look like? For those of you at the well, I like saying that what we're about to do will be the largest investment in a gospel transformative project in our city's history. And I could say that because Brad says that about his project all the time, but he's in Clovis, I'm in Fresno, so we're still good. So we're good. So I guess we have one more minute. So if there's any questions, I can answer a few, and I'll certainly be up here to answer anything. So there's a couple that we're looking at. The one right now that we're working on is the Sierra Hospital in Dakota and 41. Yeah, so what you would do is you can call our number, and we have a volunteer number, and so a volunteer coordinator, you would meet, they would arrange a time, you would come in and meet. And I apologize for being coy about the hospital, man, so there's probably a backstory of that. Sorry, there's just a lot of politics involved in it, and so I don't mind telling the church, it's just, politicians, man, I swear. Well, yeah, but I mean, I won't name any names. If you talk to certain politicians, they want to house everybody because of that problem, right? They don't like seeing it. I want people to be sheltered too, because we only have so much time before the air goes out of the room, and they can't be brought back anymore, right? And so that's one of the things that they're all doing. But one of the reasons you're seeing people all over the place is because we have that policy that doesn't allow people to congregate in certain areas. I personally have told the city, like, look, until we can all get them inside, have a policy that shifts people inside for shelter, you might as well just let them stay down by us, because, hey, that's what we do. And when you spread them all out all over the place, like, I know that the camps aren't good, but when you just spread them out all over the place, we're just seeing what's happening. And it looks like there's a lot more street homeless than there actually are, which distracts from the bigger problem. So, hey, I think I'm just out of time. If there's any more questions, I'll be up here talking. Hey, thank you so much for your time today.
Hello. All right. Some of the other groups are going to come in. If you need to go to the bathroom or anything like that, I think we have a few minutes, and then we'll have some announcements, a couple more things. We want to feed you. We're going to have some tamales and burritos that are homemade, really good. So if you want to take about 5 minutes to go to the bathroom or anything like that, please do that now, and we'll see you in a couple.